Hello, welcome to Drunk on Comics. This is our podcast about comic books, conventions, and all other thing nerdies, as I said last week, or things nerdy.
I heard you say it, and I just didn't want to stop recording.
Yeah, this is actually a special early morning edition for us. So, I'm Derek, by the way. With me, we've got Tony.
Hello.
Matthew.
The dude abides.
And Kevin.
Yeah. Bangarang!
Yeah, it is pretty early.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. This is the first time I think we've recorded before like 3 in the afternoon.
And we are hungover on comics today.
Pretty much. So we
woke up with them spread all around us.
Yeah.
Like a trash angel.
A trash angel.
Yeah, well, there's no snow yet, so.
What you know, this brings back a memory. I do remember like you telling me something about like a pile of comic books on your bed one time. Maybe, I don't know, I drink a lot.
No, what it was, we did this this old video.
Oh!
This video was it was called like 10 things not to do if you're like a nerd. And one of the footage was you recorded me waking up, and I had like comic books spread all over,
just rolling around in the comics like it's a pile of money. So, all right, well,
I just want to say I'm so hungover from comics. I found that I puked up Phantom Lady and Dow Man in the toilet.
Oh, quit your bitching! I gave that to you for free. All right, guys. Well, we are going to get going into off the shelf. Before we do, got a little warning. We are a spoiler-heavy show. We're going to talk about things that happened in this week's books. And actually, at one point, we'll talk about a book from the past as well. If you guys don't want to hear what we have to say, if it's a book that you're going to read, just hit pause, go read your book, and then come back. Otherwise, if you like spoilers, we're in the perfect spot. So, Off the Shelf this week is brought to you again by Detroit Fanfare. It's going to be October 26th, 27th, and 28th at the Hyatt Regency in Dearborn, Michigan. We're going to be doing a live recording of our podcast there. We're going to be there having fun, you know, looking cool, talking to people. I don't know what else.
Poking Derek with a stick.
Probably drinking beer.
Oh, yeah.
And reading comic books. Yeah,
and the great thing is because it's in the hotel and they do have a bar that serves beer, I think we can just walk around with beer while we're in there.
Success!
Yeah. So
that is proof that the American economy is bouncing back.
Beer sales?
Yes.
Actually, did you know that beer sales and alcohol sales go up when the economy is down?
Yes.
Heck yeah.
So does pregnancy rate, because there's nothing else to do.
You can't pay your cable? Let's fuck. So, Tony, why don't you kick it off this week with what you got on your first book?
All right. So I want to branch out a bit and pick something totally wild. And so I went to the depths of the sea and picked up Aquaman number 12.
Oh, shit!
Man. Now, did you fall asleep while reading it at all?
No, actually, I mean, first to get off, it's written by Jeff Johns and penciler Ivan Reyes. It's stuff I've been hearing a lot about Aquaman lately with the whole reboot and how it's one of the best books out there. And I flipped through some pages a while ago at the comic store. Like, art looked pretty good. You know, I just don't know how I could follow a man that talks to fishes. But I have to say that...
Sorry, I don't know why. Like, I just picture Aquaman, like, sitting with Bert from Sesame Street in a boat going, "Here, fishy, fishy, fishy."
I mean, I've wanted to read, at least see what the heck all the fuss is about, and so I figured
I've heard that lately. There's been some good buzz about the comic.
Okay. Yeah, and this is as good as we can any. This is part 6 of a story arc. So
you jumped in.
Yes. Flat out of the back, I don't know who most of these characters are. I mean, since I've only never read Aquaman ever. But I do know of Mara, Aqua Girl.
Okay, I didn't know about her, but
I've seen pictures of her before. So
was she in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition?
Yes, okay. Yes, she was.
Oh, now we're back to swimsuit editions of the comic books. Anyway,
then there's some guy named Vostok and a chick named Yawara who has a pet cheetah. So how that thing survives underwater?
I didn't think cats liked water.
No, but
it has a snorkel.
Listen. Although I had no clue on the story, the pages looked phenomenal. The art was just great, and it had a lot of action. it compelled me to actually flip the page, not just being like, oh my god. Not knowing what was going on kind of sucked. It looks like next month kind of concludes this whole story arc. And with that said, I'm not a huge fan, but I wasn't turned off by Aquaman, so I may pick up another one later on.
So skip the next issue for you, probably.
And then maybe start the new story arc and see, you know, where it's going. Like I said, it surprisingly didn't suck. And so, I mean,
I think that's a good review.
Yes.
But, well, you know,
It didn't turn you off. Like, what did you give him earlier? Sex Bomb and
Phantom Frodo? Lady and Doll Man. Is that what I gave?
Yeah,
you? Yeah. I wanted to try something new, and actually, I did try a couple other new things, and I tried that one, and I liked the first couple pages, and I got halfway through it, and I'm like, oh, I'm bored, and like I skimmed the rest, and I'm like, I'm done. Like I couldn't finish it.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, so it's, you know, I'm eventually going to pick up another random and one and see what's going on with the old Fish Whisperer.
Well, and that Fish Whisperer, that's what I'm telling. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, for us being Marvel guys primarily, and kind of, I mean, we are trying to branch out. That's actually, I'd consider to be a good review if you're going to go back and pick up another issue, you know, that you're going to go give it another shot and try and get into the character a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, cool. Well, I stuck at least with my main book for this week with good old Marvel. In fact, I stuck with Captain Marvel, number 3, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, art by Dexter Soy, and the cover is by Ed McGuinness. Background on this, Ms. Marvel, Carol Danvers, has taken on the mantle of Captain Marvel. She's donning a new uniform as well. She's ended up accidentally sent back in time to the World War II era and finds herself fighting alongside a squad of all-women pilots stranded on some unknown island, probably in the Pacific.
Do they refer to them as wasps?
No, actually, they do not.
Yeah, see, that would be kind of cool if they did.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now, in this, as far as the story, the Japanese somehow have acquired some Kree technology-based aircraft called Prowlers.
Fighting the Japs in World War II as opposed to the Germans, that seems new for Marvel.
Yeah, it is a little bit different, because normally it is the Nazis that you always see.
Well, yeah, it's easy, fighting. It's safe.
Yeah.
And you got a lot of villainous characters there.
Yeah. Now, in the comic, the women managed to take down one of these Prowlers, and Carol frees the pilot. There is a Japanese pilot inside it. They didn't know until they took it down. She tells him, go back, get all of your best pilots, all of your best men, your equipment, and come back, because then we're going to kick your ass, and we don't want you thinking that we beat you on a weak side. We're going to kick your ass with your best. So they come back. The squad takes them all out. And when you think all these Prowlers are down for the count, they join up together like a Voltron-type lion thing and create a massive warship. And that's kind of where they leave it at the end of the book. The reason I brought this up is because I've been loving this book since issue one. DeConnick really makes her characters attainable. They're very natural in personality as well as dialogue. And that's one of the things that grabbed me from the very start. The art by Dexter Soy, he's a genius.
Beautiful action scenes here.
Yeah, he is a genius in my opinion. And I've actually heard some people that say that they don't like his art, and I don't understand it. I mean, there are definite anime influences in here. And the coloring and finishing he does on his pages, it's just stunning. It's a really unique look to a superhero book. He seems to really get how to tell, you know, DeConnick's story without wasting spaces. His splash pages are masterpieces. But one of the main reasons I wanted to bring this up is a couple weeks back, I was kind of bitching that Marvel didn't have any, you know, female character lead solo books, you know, after they had canceled X-23. And I'm really glad that they brought this back, because not only in this issue is, you know, Carol Danvers a good, strong female lead, but all of the backup characters that are fighting alongside her are women, and they are all good, tough as nails, I would think good role model type characters in there. My only complaint on this is that there were some really cool extra pages, 3 extra pages at the end, that kind of give you a little bit of extra backstory and some depth to the supporting characters. But there's only actually 16 pages of real story in this book.
Seems light.
Yeah, I mean, now granted, it's a $2.99 book. It's not a $3.99 book. But I wish it would have been the full 22 pages of the main story, and then they could add the extra after that. But instead, it's a total book of 19 pages. That said, the book has an awesome feel to it. It's good classic storytelling with characters that feel real and human. And you know, the art is it's in a class all its own. So, I mean, even though it's shorter than I wanted, it was still well worth the money. And as long as they keep doing what they're doing, I am going to keep buying this book. It's fantastic.
How many issues do you think it'll take till Marvel cans it?
You know, it's hard to say because Marvel always seems to can the books that I really love.
Then don't start reading Deadpool.
Deadpool will never go away. But you know, the thing with it is I was looking at the Marvel previews and they're already showing like up through issue 7, so I know it's going at least that far. Dexter Soy is still doing the art on it. Kelly Sue DeConnick's still writing it. So I want to see this team stay together for a long time. I mean, we're talking, you know, like Chris Claremont runs. So, but that's my book on Captain Marvel. Matthew, what do you got?
I decided to pick back up Conan the Barbarian from Dark Horse Comics. It's Conan the Barbarian number 7. It's the beginning. It's part 1 of Border Fury. So it was nice to grab an issue that is starting a new story arc. Written by Brian Wood. Art by Becky Cloonan. Cloonan the artist.
Cloonan the penciler.
Yes. Colors by Dave Stewart. Good book. I love Conan. I've always been a big fan of Conan. When Dark Horse re-released them a few years ago, I collected Conan, just the name, up through number 50 and a lot of the ones. And then they started over with Conan the Sumerian. And that ran for a while.
Conan
and then,
the Good Sumerian?
No.
Oh, that's Good Samaritan.
Yeah, Samaritan. and then they started back up here with Conan the Barbarian, and they're at number 7 here.
This looks nothing like Arnold.
You mean the fact that Conan's got black hair and blue eyes? I don't know. That's kind of one of Robert E. Howard's really big descriptions. So what I like about it is it is Conan, but I felt that being that it's the first part of a story, there wasn't as much Conan decapitating people with one swing of his sword and just being super macho. The old pulp stories that Robert E. Howard wrote are all about Conan showing up into town, stealing something, spending all his money on booze and women, and getting into a fight, and then recycling the process as he goes to the next town. I love the fact that in the comics they give Conan a little more depth to that, but at the same time, sometimes I feel like it loses some of those pulp writing origins that he had. In this one, he is dating Belit of the Tigress, who one of the big stories from Robert E. Howard, the Queen of the Black Coast. She's a pirate captain, totally badass. In the first Arnold Conan movie, Belit was his love. They totally changed the story, but it still has the feel of Robert E. Howard's original. What I like about the art is they're in Samaria, and so all the colors are kind of muted and dark,
yeah,
and just kind of dreary, which makes you feel like, God, Samaria is a depressing place to live.
So it's not a good Samaria.
It's not a good Samaria. I love, too, that in one of the scenes, they're surrounded by snow, and the artist is like, hey, let's put that little breath coming out of their mouths to remind everyone how cold it was.
Yeah.
And since it's August here, I kind of liked it because in my air conditioning, I felt a little chilled.
The thing that I was surprised about, because, I mean, I haven't looked at a Conan book in forever. I'm surprised, like Tony said, though, I mean, he doesn't look like Arnold. He doesn't look like that big, muscular...
That actually is one of my complaints. I really like Becky Cloonan's art, but I feel that Conan... It might be because Conan is younger at this point. I think this is a younger Conan. Maybe only a couple years leaving Samaria.
Pre-roids.
Yeah, pre-roids. before he's bulked up because of all the battles. And he does look a lot younger, and you're right, he doesn't have the huge muscles and the chiseled abs, but then again, they're in the north, so he's covered with clothing. But I think a lot of that has to do with his shoulders. They don't seem as broad... And
he doesn't have as menacing of a stature, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah, and so you know, take it or leave it how you feel about that, but the rest of it is pretty awesome. I love Belit. She looks like she is gorgeous, but she looks like she's a desert flower who's wilting in the cold Sumerian. air. So
nice. One quick thing. I looked in there. Richard Starkings did the lettering on it. I just briefly looked through it. I really liked the lettering that they did. It actually stuck out. I've tried to pay more attention to that as of late.
As the one of the things that they've been doing with all these new Conans is the all the narration parts of the plot. Things are all typewritten.
Yes.
To make it look like Robert E. Howard was sitting at his computer typing that out.
Stuck out to me. And I'm like, wow, that is really, it's a nice touch.
Yep. Conan's always got his thick accent, so he's got the sharp lines, the harsh. But the one thing about the story that I really like is the reason Conan has come back to Samaria, most of the people in his village and stuff are saying, you're kind of a jerk, we don't like you, because of things that have happened in his past. Which you'd have to read up on. But as he comes back, the reason he came back is because there's another person in Samaria who's killing Samarians, and he says his name is Conan. And so Conan's pissed because someone's using his name, treading on his turf, and killing his people.
They don't show him at all?
They do at the end.
Is it Conan O'Brien that was just it was a misunderstanding?
He was a 6-foot-tall redhead. No, so that's the beginning of Border Fury, as he's come back to Samaria. To take out this other Conan. So I look forward to picking up number 8.
So you're going to keep on with it?
I think I'm going to stay on with Conan for a while again.
Awesome.
I love Conan.
I just want to say Samaria because I haven't gotten to say it yet.
Kevin, did you say it?
Samaria?
Okay, now I know we're good.
The circle is complete.
So, right. Kevin.
All right.
I see something new.
Yeah. I picked up Green Lantern Annual number 1.
Annuals are tricky.
Yeah, you know, actually, I've never liked annuals. I've never liked them. Actually,
you know what I hate about annuals? They only come out once a year.
My ex-girlfriend hated annual.
Go on, Kevin.
Generally, I skipped a bunch of them. So, I mean, there's some big events that happen in annuals.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, but the new X-Men
Giant-sized X-Men. But was that really an annual since that was the first one?
Well, technically it was an annual. But, well, I mean, like, New Mutants Annual number 2 is the first appearance of Psylocke. I mean, technically, X-Men Annual, I think, 11 is the first technical appearance of Gambit, although
Fantastic Four number 3 was the wedding. You love that issue, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm still uncomfortable about the Thing marrying his pet rock, but... Anyway, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Well, I have a question. Okay, so your review of Aquaman, you mentioned Jeff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
He's also writing... Green Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen very often where writers are doing multiple?
Yes.
Yeah.
See Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, Mark Waid's another perfect example.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, like...
So they take on, like, 4, no, 5,
Daniel Waid did
6
Bacon, did a...
Deadpool. Yeah. Rick Remender does multiples. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people out there
really?
That can do...
I think that with the writing, and not to say that writing is easier, but... When you write up a script and stuff and you get it in, you can always be reviewing it and picking it away. But once you finally get to the art part,
art's taking time. It takes a lot of time, especially like I look at this the Green Lantern Annual number 1. The art here is very very
green.
Very
green.
Detailed. Actually, not a lot of green. Actually, a lot of black. Very, very dark and gritty in the very first.
You know, and one of the things, too, it seems like a lot of times the artists that they throw on annuals, it's like they're giving them a shot on it. So it's in a lot of cases, I'm never as happy with the art on annuals as I am with the main line. And sometimes it's just because it's
really?
A change of,
okay.
of artist.
Well,
but
well,
I don't know
if
the artist
I mean,
on
if
this.
The, okay, well, Jeff Johns, Ethan Van Sciver.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Ethan Van Sciver's awesome.
Okay.
I know.
I say, like, if he was given a shot,
no,
he knocked it out of the park.
Ethan Van Sciver is he's at the top of his game. I mean, he's one of the big guys.
No, this is very, very detailed. And I got done reading this, and I flipped through some previous issues just to look at the art and compare. And, yeah, I'd definitely give this an A+. It even had, but the only, actually, no, I have to rescind my A+. because there was one scene in it, and I've mentioned my displeasure of such scenes in previous podcasts, but basically it shows there's a conflict between Hal Jordan and Blackhand, which got quite gruesome, and I actually put the book down for a little bit. Yeah, he
smashed his... Oh, wow.
Yeah, he takes his head and smashes it into a corner of a tombstone. And oh. that's just too graphic for me. So, like, I see that kind of shit. I'm like, well, how do they decide on the ratings on these things? Or do they just pick a letter out at random?
Well, it's ultimately up to the publisher. I mean, what does it say on the front? T for teen.
Yeah.
No, it's not a T plus.
No, it's just straight up teen. Okay. But of course, I don't know what. I mean, and I'm sure these are ratings just given by the publisher, right?
This scene is awesome.
We'll come back to that, Tony. But like, I mean, just for a heads up, like the Captain Marvel, I just looked is a teen plus. You know.
Really? Oh God! I haven't seen what's inside Captain Marvel, but I'm sure it has to be a little bit more tame than what's in.
Oh, there's no gruesome violence in here. There's
No, I'm not saying. Now, getting back to the book, that's just a few panels. It's not overly violent beyond that. That is just something that stood out for me, like Deadpool and Spider-Man.
Yeah, blowing his brains out.
That scene is just stuck in my head, and there's no... I need that thing from Men in Black.
Yeah, you know, the mind eraser.
Yeah, exactly. But, all right, so a quick summary of this is... for the last handful of issues, you've had the big conflict between Sinestro and Greenland, or Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns, and Blackhand. And I just started picking up Green Lantern, and Blackhand is nothing. He was like a whiny douchebag, last I read him.
No, yeah. In Blackest Night, he came back. I've read Blackest Night, and he became.
He's hardcore.
Yeah.
And he is just. He kind of reminds me of. The T-1000.
Okay.
You know, he jumped off a cliff and his brains are all over the place, and then his ring puts him back together, and he's...
Does his ring create like a little pooper scooper thing to get him and bring him back in?
You know, I wish I would have brought another issue so I could show you, but maybe. But, okay, so there's a big conflict, and then while there's this big conflict going on, the Guardians are... hanging out on Oa, and they're like, you know, there's a lot of violence out in the world, and we came up the Green Lantern Corps to try to combat this, but they're all a bunch of douchebags and asshats. So get rid of what we created. But in order to get rid of what we created, we have to go back to our very first creation. Because apparently the Green Lanterns were the second army.
Okay.
So you go back to the first army, which is locked away in someone's closet, and then they bust him out. They're going to say, all right, old Green Lantern guy, take care of everybody else, and then we're going to make a third army. I
got lost.
So yeah. I'm not a big fan of how they're justifying getting to that. I mean, like, what's wrong with the Green Lanterns? I mean, they've had a good run. They're a little corrupted here and there, but then they're like, ah, fuck, we need to start all over. And now they have this new guy who looks like a total badass, and he's going to start fucking things up in the entire universe. So now the rise of the
Third Army
is now going to branch into the other series, Green Lantern Corps, Red Lanterns, etc. So,
yeah, this is the prologue of one of the big. Because I know DC's doing Trinity War,
okay,
and then the Rise of the Third Army is a big kind of their.
What's Trinity War going to be?
From what From what I've heard, I haven't heard the definite, but everyone's assuming it's Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman getting together.
Oh, okay, now I've heard.
But then they've also been talking about it could be this woman in the red cloak. Like, I've read bits and pieces of their whole reboot and everything, and how some stuff from the past carried over, some stuff didn't. Like Green Lanterns, that book from old DC to new DC pretty much went straight, nothing went out of the way. So those are more books that if you want to continue reading. So this thing I want to kind of pick up, the first DC book I ever read was Blackest Night.
Oh, really?
Or the eight-part series. It was badass. It was really gritty, really dark, really more than the, I'm Superman and I can never be destroyed, and I'm Wonder Woman, and I'm Batman, and I won't use guns. Like, it was really, let's decapitate some people, let's bring these people back, let's just fuck up these people's worlds. So this is kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, and though, at the end, it leaves me with the impression that, okay, now there's going to be this big, huge, motherfucking badass, and he's going to ravage all these other corps and people, and it's just going to be a big, huge brawl, and actually, that's what interests me. I want to see some. I want to see some butt kicking, some action, and even though I had my ups and downs with this book and for its story, I still probably continue with picking up a couple of these issues. I'm not looking forward to it fiscally, but but you know what? I did pick up this annual for $5. So
ooh,
I know.
Yeah,
but you know what though, the art was worth it.
Well, and, you know, and it's a nice chunky book. I mean, I don't know what the page count is in it, but you know, I mean, there's a lot there.
So
now I got a question though for you. I mean, the Green Lantern in the New 52, he's their gay character, right?
No,
who is?
It's an alternate world guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so wait, they started out with a New 52, and they already have a fucking alternate world.
Yeah, they have like two or three now.
Because, well, yeah, there's been like so many Green Lanterns on Earth. Isn't the main... Is it following Hal Jordan?
Yeah.
Or I thought the...
Well, the only ones that I know of are Hal Jordan of Earth, and then you have Kyle Rayner, which was like the guy after Hal Jordan back in the late 90s. But now he's out doing his own thing with a Green Lantern Corps, or New Guardians.
Who's the black guy?
I don't know. Because
I thought he was the main Green Lantern.
Oh, he's the new Green Lantern of Earth. He's got the Earth sector. Hal Jordan though is kind of like general of the corps.
Well, he can go wherever he wants.
In this issue, actually, I picked up number one, and he was actually stripped from his ring because he was too opinionated. So the Guardians ripped his ring out. And yeah, that's where the other Green Lantern came in. So Hal Jordan was even supposed to be one until Sinestro was like, you know what? I need your help taking care of some business. Here's a ring. Let's go.
So
transform and roll out.
Thanks to the power of the interwebs, which Tony will talk more about here later. It's Alan Scott is the gay Green Lantern. I'd never heard of.
Alan Scott sounds familiar.
Alan
Scott, wasn't that the original Green Lantern?
Original, because
yeah, with the cape.
Yep.
So, no, I was just kind of curious if they talked about it, because I've been reading Astonishing X-Men with North Star, and actually,
he's gay.
Yeah, right. Got married. He and his husband. I mean, they actually have a somewhat prominent role in it as far as both of them together, and it's really cool. You know, I mean, it's kind of nice to see the human side of the characters mixed in.
You know, when Marvel announced that North Star was going to get married and was gay, like...
He's been
open for a while.
I thought the 90s.
I thought it was more impressive is when they did the Ultimate X-Men and Colossus was gay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he was dating North Star.
Oh.
And they're at different schools. I thought that was a bold choice.
Yeah.
Taking one of your real big title, macho, manly characters. So.
Yeah. Wow, that is pretty cool. So, but overall?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. By the way, we did get some good feedback on the Kevin's grading scale.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I'm giving it yeah. So, all right, Tony, you got another book though, don't you?
Yes. I got America's Got Powers. First off, got it because I've been watching America's Got Talent, and I kind of like that show. And this reminded me of that. And I'm thinking, is this like a talent show for people with power?
Howard Stern sucked you in, didn't he? Or was it Howie? It was Howie, wasn't it?
Already, what you're talking about makes me think about the issue that you previously
idolized.
Yeah, idolized. That's immediately where my mind's already going to.
But see, now America's Got Powers. What issue is 10?
Number three.
Number three. Okay.
Yeah, it was number
three. I think it's been out longer than that.
It was created, written, and the way that they had it in the front, I couldn't tell exactly who was the writer and who was the artist, or if they both shared it, because the titles were right underneath both of them. But Jonathan Ross and Brian Hitch were the ones that did it.
Wait, Jonathan Ross and Brian Hitch?
Yes.
I think, if I'm correct, I think Brian Hitch is normally a writer, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
If it as my memory serves, and I could be.
But they overall created it. Starts off the first page, it had like some like secret files and kind of explaining a bit of what's going on with this world. Kind of like some people seem to be like pissed off that they were experimented on in the prison. So overall, generally getting a sense of, this isn't like a mutant-type population or stuff. These people got powers from some sort of government testing. And then it seems like they've been rounding up kids with powers in Alcatraz. The ones who are super violent are in the Mojave Desert, where they're actually being tested by the government. And this is where it kind of gets interesting, where the testing is being done. They have this kind of like machine that can take away the powers from these superheroes and transfer them to other people. Meaning, this government lab is taking superheroes and transferring the powers into their soldiers. And what it seemed like it killed the superhero, what they found out was, after like 10 days, this superhero, that the original person that has this power, gets their power back. So it's an infinite supply of taking it. Not only that, but they can hook up different superheroes and mix and match the right chemicals that they want for their super soldiers. Now, the soldiers aren't as powerful as the alpha mutants, superheroes, whatever, but they still have some. They're still going to be kick-ass soldiers. But finally, and this is all in the beginning, it finally gets down to what I was thinking this book was about, which was America's Got Talent. And what they have is a competition for America's Got Powers. What you're seeing is these kids are in this locker room, and it seems like the point of this game show is to get on a superhero team, to kind of get better dorm room, better this and that. And then you meet this boy, Tommy, who doesn't quite know what his powers are. He seems to be the main protagonist. And they all fight in this battle arena, and it's kind of for television. What you secretly then find out in one of the panels is it's actually government run. They're trying to test these people, see what their powers are, and who they're going to put on their team, aka lock up and suck those powers from.
Interesting. And make superhero smoothies out of the different flavors.
Yeah. A team of powers break in to the arena, and they break Tommy out. And that was kind of the ending, and then it had some showing of some kid lifting a car. I have to say, I haven't been this intrigued about a book in a while. The one thing I have to say is, you need to start at issue one. I was so kind of lost in from what it sounded like, this kid Tommy, they're saying, doesn't have a power. He's showing up always as not having one. But from what they kept talking about in this arena battle is, but last night, he, you know, blew up the crowd, meaning must have been the issue before they showed his power. So I totally missed that out. And that's kind of the intriguing thing. This kid that they're thinking is probably going to be the most powerful of superheroes isn't showing anything. So that's what they've been kind of trying to test, is what has this kid got? What does he have that we can take from him?
Probably the Phoenix Force.
Now, and is this an Image book?
Yes.
Okay. I may have missed if you said. I'm just sitting there going, I couldn't remember who.
Yeah, it's Image. Like I said, I normally just don't pick up books, but it looked great, and it totally was. The art in it was awesome. But this is a series that needs to be read in order to get the whole story. I'm definitely planning on picking up the ones before this, and it looked like it was part three of six. So once it's done, I'm definitely going to review the whole thing and kind of get the whole overall story. But so far, it's got me hooked. I need to definitely see what's happened before. Hopefully, it tells a little bit more of how some of these kids got their powers, and ultimately the conspiracy theory of what's going to happen when they find out what this kid's powers are.
You know, I've heard a ton of really good things about this book, you know, just from the writing to the story to the art. So I'm glad you picked it up, because it's something that I've been curious about, but I've got so many other titles that I'm buying right now that...
Well, yeah, and like I said, I thought it was going to be kind of like really, really kind of dorky, cliched, America's Got Talent type, you know, this is going to be kind of dumb, they're cashing in on the name, but it totally sold. It was worth every penny.
That's awesome. Sweet. All right, well, that does it for Off the Shelf this week, which, by the way, again, was brought to you by Detroit Fanfare. I forgot to mention, you can find them at DetroitFanfare.com. Find them on Twitter, find them on Facebook. So, all right, we are moving on to Kevin's Long Box. What you got, Kev?
Oh, my gosh. On to me, man. Okay, so thumbing through my very organized... long boxes, and I dug up
There's no very organized.
Yeah, very long organized, box. Yes.
Spoon.
Yes. I picked. I looked up The Tick. Big Time Tax Terror.
Number one.
It's funny is that like almost every Tick issue is a number one.
They cancel it after the first issue and then start it up again.
It's just The Tick with a different name. The Tick was introduced in the early 90s, late 80s, I believe. It was done by a company called New England Comics. And actually, New England Comics was actually a comic book store. And they were looking for just someone to promote the store.
Interesting. Yeah, I never knew this.
Yeah, so they just did a black and white comic book strip, and they wanted someone who was an anti-hero, so they came with The Tick.
So the comic was before the TV show?
You mean the live-action one you're talking about, right?
No, the cartoon.
Oh, yes. There was that cartoon, too.
Yes. I remember the cartoon more than I remember the live-action.
Have you ever seen the live-action?
Yeah.
The live-action was pretty good, too.
Yeah, like Patrick Warburton.
Well, I saw
a great pick for
I went back and watched it on Netflix, and I'm like, God damn it, why didn't I watch more of these episodes when they were on? They got canceled after like 3 episodes. But hey, props to Fox for giving it such a crazy idea a shot.
Yeah.
I hope more comic book adaptations will make it to the small screen.
Kevin, can you answer this question for me, though?
Okay.
What are the Tick's powers? Because I don't think it's ever really been explained, except that...
Really? I think the only one that is that he's impermeable.
Okay.
But they actually... And you know what?
So he doesn't absorb water. Oh, wait, no, that's something else.
I heard someplace that his power is having a sense of drama. That drama follows him. He always happens to be right in the middle of anything that's going on, and that's what his declared superpower is.
Sure, I can see it. I think they actually specifically call it something else in the book. But it's been a while since I've read The Tick. So it came out and it was just black and white for several years. And they were like, okay, it got a following. Then they started doing it in color, and then. Then Fox picked it up, merchandising followed, video games, merchandising.
The Tick seemed to be huge for at least a good handful of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm puzzled why it actually dropped off, because it's every time, every Tick I pick up, it's funny, it's clever, Especially looking back on the television show, there was always lots of continuity. Like
continuity was great. The moon continued to get messed up, and they kept that continuity in all the episodes afterwards.
Yeah, you never saw that in animated series, and they reflect that in the book.
Well, there's kind of like X-Men. I mean, Morph died, and then he came back. That was continuity, wasn't it? I knew that'd piss you off.
Fuck. What? All right. Anyway,
Tony, I'm pissing off Kevin this week, not you.
God, damn. All right. No. So, all right. So, in this issue, Big Tax Time Terror, it's just really a conflict between the Tick and the Louse. Actually, it used to be like the Tick, but then because there were two Ticks.
Yeah.
Yeah. The brown one who. He actually had a Tick logo on his shirt, but he later changed his name to the Louse. But anyway, it was just actually there was a conflict there, and then the Tick got a big government issued refund, even though he has no job. He's never had a job or employment.
Sounds like a political conversation waiting to happen.
No, well, he got an ass load of money because apparently because there's some sort of superhero clause out there that he met, and he got a shitload of money. Yeah. Anyway, but damn funny book. Art has always been real tight on all the Tick books, and I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure. Was all really done by the same team
now,
over
who,
and over again.
Who did this book?
Well, Mark Silva.
Okay.
And I think he started it, or was it Sean Wang? It was like one of those two. I think they started it, and Mark Sandroni.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think it's been the same team over and over again because the art's always very consistent and well done. The humor is great.
No, from a collector's standpoint, is there any value to any of the old Tick comics? Do you know?
There's probably number one,
like a first printing number.
Yeah,
one.
that's first printing number one, and maybe some of the early art that came out when. New England Comics was just simply a store, so maybe. But okay. But you know what? It's fun. It's just a fun book. There's a massive like 600 page collection of
omnibus.
Yeah, and it's pricey at like $60-$70. But
yeah.
But if you pick that up, that's a winner right there.
Sweet.
It's be weeks and weeks of entertainment.
Well, Kevin, I hope you when you put your comic back in the long box, it goes back in the proper order.
Oh, it will be. I feel a little guilty. I should have brought this out more for during the tax season. Because on the cover, it's a bunch of tax forms with demonic eyes. And
well, the great thing about podcasts is that people can listen to this next April. So, all right, well, that's going to do it on your long box. We got some news and notes. Tony, I know you got something on news and notes.
Yeah, there's been rumors flying around before even the new Batman came out that they were doing a Batman reboot next movie, which sounded asinine. Like, how could you already do a reboot of Batman before
the new
Batman?
Because he makes a lot of money, that's why.
I know, but how...
They done a reboot of Spider-Man?
Yeah, and that kind of... Even though it was a good movie, it still pissed me off. But the thing is,
yeah,
Batman has had...
They had to do a reboot of Spider-Man because Spider-Man had... the rights would have been up and they would have gone back to Marvel had Sony not made another movie.
Yeah, you had to make something.
But Warner Brothers owns DC. They don't have it out to anyone else, so they don't need to do a reboot. So this is kind of the good news, bad news, kind of tied in with the Justice League. Justice League has a new writer right now, writing on a new script. His name's Will Beale. And what they plan on doing with the new the Justice League movie that's in the works is they're doing the exact opposite of what Marvel did. They're going to make the Justice League and then they're going to branch out on individual stories from that.
Well, I think they kind of have to, because otherwise, I mean, it's going to be 5 years before they get the
Justice. Well, not only that, but also they're. But the bad thing is they're banking on them. They're going to make where Marvel set up that climactic ending. They're going to hope that they can ride those waves, have everyone come, take all the money that they just threw at making this huge movie. Because they're going to be sending a lot of money towards this movie, not knowing if all these characters are going to be able to prove themselves to carry the whole movie. Yes, it will. There's enough nerds out there that will go see the Justice League movie. Mm-hmm. But from that, they're going to branch off and do possibly a Wonder Woman, Aquaman, set. Smart move on their part. But what I like the most is that they're going to reboot Batman within this movie. They're not going to start with a whole new... Because Christopher Nolan's Batman doesn't fit into a...
Superhero
world. As they call it, the Marvel movie universe for mm-hmm. the movies that they're kind of making Marvel now be. They're trying to make a DC superhero universe that... movie universe that one doesn't quite fit. So it's understandable that they need to kind of reboot him. But how many times do we need to see him fall down a well, get his parents shot, find out that he's a millionaire to become Batman? I mean,
he's a billionaire.
Okay, whatever. He doesn't. We don't need to keep hearing that. So it's awesome news that they're going to do that. They're going to do a quick, you know, snippet in the movie of I'm Batman, and then that's it.
Because we all know who these characters are. I mean, arguably that was. With the new Spider-Man movie, that was the most disappointing part for me, was having to see the origin story again. Now, arguably, the origin story being tied in more with Oscorp is really important for this new Spider-Man story arc.
But I now, as far as the new Justice League, though, I got a really quick, simple way that if the writer's listening, he can steal this, I'm okay with. Like, you just have Batman and Superman walk in, like, to the superhero bar, and Superman can go... You know, it's like, hey, what's going on? You look sad. Yeah, me too. Yeah, my parents are dead. So are mine. All right, story moves on.
Yeah.
You know, there's your origin.
Yeah, and I love, you
but
know...
now they're friends because they have something in common.
And, you know, so I guess I don't know who the active members of the Justice League are, but I know Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman are all big members. Aquaman and Flash are the other ones.
Kind of round out
the... Xan and Jaina.
I'm thinking of, like, the Super Friends right now.
That's Super Friends.
Yeah, but, like... With a lot of the characters, the supporting characters for the Justice League, I don't feel that they are as interesting as the Marvel ones. And their stories and their continuity, I don't know, make as great as movies as they do stories. Like,
well, and that's something that they may realize, too, that they can't make an Aquaman movie, but they at least, you know, they don't need to wait to find out that Aquaman sucked and then include him in Justice League. Yeah. They could totally just make Justice League and then...
You don't have to wait and find out Aquaman sucks. Everybody knows Aquaman sucks. So, well, one question before we move on to our other quick little news bit. Do you know if Ben Affleck is still planning on mouth breathing and directing?
I haven't... I didn't see any... This was just more or less talking about Batman.
Okay.
That's still... The same rumors are flying around that he may still be doing that. Okay. So.
Kevin, you had a quick one before we got to move on, didn't
did.
You? About a certain doctor.
Oh my gosh, yes. Dr. Horrible. I read about Joss Whedon is going to do a follow up with his sing along
web blog or whatever.
Yeah,
it was
a sing along blog of Dr. Horrible. And now you guys see Dr. Horrible?
Oh, yeah. Only about 100 times.
Yeah, 2008. Yeah, yeah. I think that's about how many times I watched it too.
And by the way, the hammer is my penis.
Oh my gosh! I was very excited to see it. I'm interested to know what. I mean, they're gonna have to do something completely different. And I don't know. Like I'm mixed if they're gonna bring Felicia Day.
Yes.
Is that it? Whether she's going to come back or not, like, how, like, are they going to...
It could be her twin sister, Jenny.
Oh.
Or Penny. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, right? I can't remember which, but they're actually going to air that on broadcast television here, and I can't remember if it was Fox that's going to do it.
Well,
I think it's Fox.
Well, you know what, that's perfect. It's already set up perfectly for a half hour Because overall, you know, it was about 36
minutes. I think it's 45 minutes total.
Okay.
Yeah, so
you add
for
a commercial,
one hour.
You add a commercial
yeah,
break.
Yeah, so that would work out perfectly. So, yeah, that would be great. But I hope they come out with it soon.
I fully endorse actors who will take on little smaller projects that aren't really about making money, although I'm sure they made a lot of money with it because it was so successful.
Yeah.
But just trying stuff because it's fun. I mean,
yeah,
it makes us like it more.
They started doing this because of the Screen Actors Guild strike.
Writer strike.
Yeah, that's the reason why this came about.
Yeah. They should strike again so we can get more gems like that.
Quick note on this before we have to move on is that it's going to air October 9th on the CW.
Oh,
with the frog.
WB.
so
no, that's great news. Did anyone ever watch the musical commentary on the DVD?
Yes.
DVD.
Yeah, I've only watched about 10 minutes of it. Then my girlfriend's like, "This stinks."
Girlfriend stinks.
You should dump her.
No, she loved the video better than I did, but it's just the musical commentary.
Yeah,
she didn't really.
She probably doesn't like Annual either.
No.
All right, we got to move on to the Indie Turnpike before we run out of time. This week, I picked up Crossed Badlands number 10 from Avatar Press, written by David Lapham, art by Jason Burrows, and the issue I bought, the cover was done by Rollo Caceres. I hope I'm getting somewhere close to that. Now, I'm going to say this right up front. This is not a book for kids. It's not a book for the squeamish, Kevin. And it's definitely not a book for people with clown phobias. And so, Chris, I know you're listening. I'm talking to you in particular. Now, the story centers around an outcast-type kid named Edmund. Typical picked-on kid, doesn't have any real friends. He's self-conscious. He's kind of sheltered. You know, he's the kid that we all either knew or maybe even were ourselves at one point or another. Edmund just graduated high school, and he goes with his dad and his brother to the little traveling circus that's in town 20 miles away. They end up seeing a little part of the freak show. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, but the part that's really core to it is that out of nowhere, when you see the freak talking to another guy, a guy comes in who has like a bloody cross drawn across his face, and he attacks them. It jumps back then to Edmund and his brother and father watching the three-ring circus, and all of a sudden, hell breaks loose as these hordes of crossed people, these psychos, bust in and they start murdering everybody in their path. There's no reason explained in the book for it. They just are on a rampage, and they kind of remind me a little bit of like the Reavers from Firefly and Serenity. Now, Edmund's dad tries to get them out of there. He hides them like in a couple barrels, and then he grabs a bat and tries to start attacking these people that are attacking them. There's a really gruesome scene where he's fighting off the attackers, only to be beaten down. He is then raped, which it's not graphically shown. It's said. And then he gets crossed by these circus clowns and turns him into one of these murderers as well. Edmund escapes at the end of the issue, makes it back home, and that's where they leave it to be continued in the next issue. Now, this is a book I jumped right into. I'd seen it on the shelves. I knew nothing about it, never opened one. I just picked it up, opened it up, said, art's kind of interesting. It looks like it could be an interesting thing. I gave it a try. Now, I didn't understand what was going on until the last page, actually after the last page, when there's an advertisement for their free weekly online comic that basically explains that there was this crossed plague that hit, and it turned in a certain percentage of the people into these insatiable killers. And then it keeps spreading from there.
Was that free?
There's the free online. Now, I bought the comic.
Oh, okay. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, there's a free online weekly thing that follows, like, two people that are, you know, which I want to go online and check out. And, Matt, if you would jump to the back there, and it's one page back before that. And one more.
There you go.
Okay. I'm going to read it so you guys can go check this out online for free because we all like free stuff.
And you're way off on your
page number. So it is crossedcomic.com. CrossedComic.com.
How do you spell comic?
C-O-annual-M-I. So this is, it's a really fucked up story. It's not what I expected, but as I have dropped a couple other titles recently in some of my miniseries, I'm going to pick this one up and see where it goes. It's well written, definitely had some twists that I didn't expect, and I'm just hoping that I don't get desensitized by the shock and, you know, the shock value in an issue or two where all of a sudden it loses the interest for me. I don't know if that'll happen or not. I have nothing to go on. But I'm going to track down, there's a ton of back issues of these things, like, across the board. So, I did like the art. Burroughs used a number of different styles as the story changes, and it was a really nice job with perspectives and point of view shots. So, fucked up, yes, twisted, yes, but I did like it, and I'd recommend it for anybody that's a little bit, you know, deranged like me. So, that's it for, Indie Turnpike. Tony, you got some interwebs?
Yes. First off, last week, I didn't quite realize, I read the
Dorkly.
Yeah, it's just Dorkly, .com.
Not Dorkly.
Dorkly Bits. Dorkly Bits is the title of some of the sections, but yeah, Dorkly.com is the actual site.
I'm glad you remember that. I forgot I was going to say something.
But. Yes. This week's link of something everyone should check out, you should pull it up on your computers there. Superhero Girls, Tumblr.com.
I'm familiar with that one.
It in itself is a piece of art. I mean, it is art. It is semi not safe for work. Some of the pictures are not, but pretty much it is girls dressed up cosplay, superhero costumes, lingerie, anything, and they're all fucking hot. Most of them.
Well, not that one.
That
definitely not safe for work as Tony's scrolling through. Thank you. I'm glad you're looking on your computer and I'm not looking on my work computer. So, yeah, there's some fantastic ones. Not safe for work at all. So, and not for kids.
Yes, not for kids. But superherogirls.tumblr.com. If you type in superhero girls on Google, the first thing that comes up is this site. It is definitely worth a look. It, is great to
Kevin snorkeling over here.
It's great to see that there are some girls that also enjoy comics and all things geeky,
or at least role play, if nothing else.
And that's always the best.
And
so,
I bet you they love Annual. I know.
I overplayed that joke.
That's all right. That's what I do, Tony.
I know.
I'm good at it. That's why you're giving people sticks. So,
yes.
All right. So,
gotta get off the interwebs there, Kevin.
Sorry, I'm out.
All right. So, last segment for the day is Booze in a Book, and this week I picked up One Shot Looker, and it is one. It's a one shot. It's Looker number one from DC Comics. So, you know, by the way, before I get into this, I gotta say I'm actually kind of proud of all of us because without talking, we all went out and picked up new stuff. We jumped into a bunch of series in the middle of things, you know, where, you know, we actually took our own advice to people that we've been given over the last week or two for new collectors. Where do I start? Sometimes you just got to jump in. Knew nothing about Looker other than
there's a Looker on the cover?
Yeah.
Are you judging the book by the cover art again?
You know what? I opened it and looked inside, and then I judged.
Okay.
So, this was written by Ian Edginton. Art was done by Mike S. Miller. Colors were by Rex Locus and Antonio Fabella, and the cover was done by Guillaume March.
I like the cover. That's all I want to say. It's pretty, I don't know if novel is the right word, but just with the camera, the picture. And
yeah, doing the self-pick of the vampire girl with her little one-night stand laying in the bed, and she's doing the self-shot, but because she's a vampire, she's not in it, and you see the guy behind her with the blood dripping from his neck.
She looks like Jessica Rabbit.
She does, yeah. Now, this I'm going to pair this book with a nice big glass of Juarez Warrior Port. And I know it's a little cliche putting a dark red wine with a vampire book, but I picked these to put together because both the vampire thing and port wines are best when they are well made and taken in moderation. Mm. So, in short, I love both the book and I love the port, and I truly appreciate them for what they are. But if you make either one of them wrong or you overdo it, you're going to make somebody puke. So, so that's it. Unless you guys got anything else, well, obviously, find us on drunkoncomics.com.
Or drunkoncomics at Facebook.
No, it's not drunkoncomics at Facebook. It's facebook.com/drunkoncomics.
But if they typed in drunkoncomics when they're at Facebook.
Oh, that would work, yes. Also, at drunkoncomics for Twitter. Email us, send us some love, you know, write us letters, whatever it may be. So I guess that's going to do it. Gentlemen, you want to say goodbye in a special way this week?
Krom! That's how you say goodbye in Samaria.
I thought you were saying that because he had a crumb. He had a birthday this week.
Arnold did?
Yeah.
Aw, happy birthday, Arnold.
Yeah.
Whatever. Well, actually, it was Jack Kirby's. Would have been Jack Kirby's birthday this week too.
Happy birthday, Jack.
Yeah.
Whenever I hear you say Samaria, I just want some shawarma. I say we should go get some.
Is there a shawarma joint here in town?
We'll go find one.
I bet you there will be.
Next time. See you next time.
All right, guys. Bye, on behalf of all of us, keep reading those books. We'll be back next week to talk about some more. See ya.
Look at this girl.
Remind me, I said, someone please remind me how to just let go, just let go.